Well, we left off, didn't we, at the Mount of Transfiguration, and there Moses and Elijah were encouraging Jesus for the exodus out of sin into redemption. Glorious image we see there at the Mount. And well, we saw, didn't we, that, well, it was going to be Elijah who took the mantle from Moses. And we're going to find that in this session, somebody is going to take the mantle off Elijah. Who might that person be? John, and of course, the person we've just read, the Apostle Paul. The Apostle Paul now is going to walk in the footsteps of Elijah, just as Elijah walked in the footsteps of Moses. Now, we've just read Acts chapter 9, and there's a conversation here of Paul between him and his Lord, and he's blinded by the light in Acts chapter 9. And then in verse 8 to 11, he's being told then to go to Damascus. And if you look at verse 10 to 11, as Paul, well, I should call him Saul, really, shouldn't I, at this point? But, well, he has been converted. So Paul now is in Damascus. He's in a house. And meanwhile, as all this is taking place, God now, or maybe Jesus, visits a man called Ananias in Acts chapter 9, verse 10 to 11. And Ananias is being told then to go and greet a man called Paul in Damascus. And I tell you what, brothers and sisters, Ananias knew exactly who Saul or Paul was. Paul, Saul, the Pharisee? And he's been told, go and greet Paul. And you'll find him there in a house praying. You imagine the surprise of Ananias coming to the house in Damascus and seeing there, soon to be the Apostle Paul praying. The legacy of Paul had already been spread, that he had been at the hands of the murder of Stephen the martyr. And now we see a converted man at Damascus in this particular house. And Saul there is being given a vision. So they've got quite a number of events happening at the same time. As Paul is praying, he sees a vision of Ananias coming to him. And Ananias knows about all Saul's wrongdoings. And now he has the authority, Saul has the authority to go to the Gentiles. And in verse 15, the Lord said to Ananias, this man, out of all the myriads of people, it's going to be this man, Saul, who is going to be the vessel to carry my name to the Gentiles, to kings and to the children of the earth, to the extent of all the Roman Empire. 4, verse 16, I will show him how great things he must suffer for my name's sake. There's going to be a suffering of Paul for the name of the Lord Jesus Christ. Now, notice this phrase here, or this particular word, for I will show. This is Jesus speaking to Ananias. I will show is exactly the same word that means to show physically. Saul is going to receive an image of his suffering, and he's going to be shown it physically. Saul is going to be given a forewarning of the things he must suffer for Christ, and Ananias now is going to come and meet Paul, Saul, to explain to him that Jesus is going to show him the things he must suffer. He's going to be shown something, is Saul. Now, I want us to notice some of the phrases here when Ananias comes and greets Paul the apostle. Notice the phrase. It says in verse 17 that he laid his hands on him. And then once he laid his hands on him, that Saul or Paul rose and was baptized. And then in verse 19, Paul took food and was strengthened. There are three things, three crucial things. Ananias comes to him, explains to him this vision that he's going to see, to show him the things that he must suffer. And then Ananias places his hands on him. Saul then raises up. He was baptized. And then taking food, he was then strengthened. Now, where does Paul go next? Well, have a look in verse 19. And when he received meat, he was strengthened. Then was Saul certain days with the disciples which were at Damascus. So you've got a little phrase here. This is the only technical bit. But you've got a little word there that says, then was Saul certain days. Can you see that the moment he was strengthened, and you see that full stop, and then you have the phrase, then was Saul certain days, there seems to be a period of time missing between the full stop after strengthened and then the word then. There's a whole section of time that's not mentioned in verse 19. We've got a whole period of time in verse 19 that's not whispered or uttered in the pages of Acts chapter 9. It's missing something. There's a change happening here in this particular verse. There's a transition into something. And the emphasis is that Paul did something before going to Damascus. Because it says, then was Saul certain days with his disciples in Damascus. In other words, brothers and sisters, Saul or Paul did something before he went to Damascus. And so the question we're going to ask, where was Paul for a period of time before he then goes to Damascus? Well, I think Paul actually tells us. He tells us in Galatians chapter 1 and verse 17, listen to these words, neither went I up to Jerusalem to them which were apostles before me, and neither did I go to Damascus, but I went to Arabia. Now look there in verse 19, where it says, then was Saul certain days. Galatians 1 and verse 17 actually fits in that little pocket there between the full stop and the word then, because in that period, before he goes to Damascus, Paul says he went to Arabia. Arabia he goes. In fact, the emphasis here is that he departed from Damascus and goes to Arabia. There was something about Arabia that compelled Paul to go. There was something mystical, something mysterious, something sacred, something holy about Arabia. In fact, he says in Galatians 1 and verse 16 that immediately he went. The moment Ananias touched him, the moment Ananias baptized him, and the moment he ate and was strengthened, up he gets and he goes straight to Arabia, which is hundreds of miles away. Paul tells us in Galatians that not only immediately did he go to Arabia, but he didn't speak to one person. He actually says the words, I conferred not with flesh. He did not talk to anybody and immediately went to Arabia. He was alone, brothers and sisters, a lonely man embarking on a journey, leaving the house in which he was praying from the moment he was baptized. So the question is, what is so significant, brothers and sisters, about Arabia? Why does he go to Arabia? What is something so special about this place? We could ask the question, couldn't we, brothers and sisters, as God asked the question to Elijah, what doest thou in Arabia, Paul? I think Paul tells us. In fact, I don't think I know he tells us. In Galatians 4 and verse 25, he explains to us that Arabia is none other than Sinai. And which place do you think he would have gone specifically at Sinai? Because Sinai is a big place. Let me ask a better question. What cave might Paul have walked into on that fateful day in the Sinaitic Peninsula? I believe, brothers and sisters, he went to the very cave in which Moses stood. I believe he went to the very cave in which Elijah stood. He went to the cave at one very particular mount, Horeb, in which God describes it as being the mount of God. What doest thou here, Paul? What is it about my character that brings you here? And he traveled through the wilderness to get there, hadn't he? Just, well, as Moses had traveled through the wilderness and just as Elijah. And so the words that were spoken to Ananias in verse 16, I will show him how great things he must suffer. Where was Saul going to be shown these things? He was going to be shown them, I believe, anyway, at Sinai. Paul is going to go to the very place, isn't he? He's going to the origins of the history of Israel. And, well, he's begun a new journey, hasn't he, Paul? He's been baptized now into the saving name of Jesus. And what better place to go to start a new exodus, to start a new journey, than where it all began in Exodus chapter 19, at the wilderness journey into Sinai. And that's where he goes, to the Mount of God. You know, we call this the road to Damascus, Acts 9, don't we? That's what we call it. The road to Damascus. This isn't the road to Damascus. This is the road to Horeb. And that's where he's going. And so we ask the question, I think you're already there, aren't you? I've got to ask it. Who else was taught by God on Mount Sinai at Horeb? Who else was given divine revelations by God at Horeb? Well, of course, it's the two brethren, the two prophets that we've been speaking about, Moses and Elijah. You know, we said, didn't we, in the previous study, that Moses and Elijah were both forerunners for people called Jesus. One was called Yahshua, the other one was called Elisha. Yah saves and salvation of Yah, the names of Jesus. And there they pass the baton of the truth on to be forerunners. What do you think Paul's going to be doing? Paul is going to be our third forerunner. In fact, he's going to be the fourth, isn't he? Because there's John the Baptist, who was the forerunner of Christ. And we have four forerunners. And I've been interested, where was John based? He was a voice where? In the wilderness. It just so happens to be not far from where the River Jordan is. There's a huge mountain range called Sinai. And so we have forerunners, one Moses, one Elijah, one John the Baptist, and the other one, believe it or not, is going to be Paul. And they're all forerunners for people called Jesus. And here he is now, running with all of his life to get to Horeb. You know, Paul was going to share the same experiences, wasn't he? Where Ananias was told that Paul would suffer the sufferings of Christ. Would you agree with me that like Moses and like Elijah, Paul also was rejected by his own people? Terrible disappointment, wasn't he? He was going to bear to suffer Christ. And you know what, brothers and sisters? It was his privilege to do so. To walk in the Spirit of his Lord gave him tremendous joy. He's going to share the same responsibilities, the same burdens, the same highs, the same lows as his predecessors. And there's one person in particular I think Paul took a lot of inspiration from. Moses was the man who inspired Elijah. Who might have inspired Paul? Elijah the prophet. And in our previous session, we saw Elijah walk in the very footprints of Moses. And in this session, we're going to see exactly the same thing, but in reverse. We're going to see now Paul walk in the very footsteps of Elijah, because he's going to be in the spirit of Elijah. You know, what was Elijah's message to God? Israel deserved what? Destruction. He was a man with vengeance running through his veins. Israel need to be destroyed. And he goes to Horeb to demand of God to unleash his angelic host upon Israel. He couldn't stand Israel. Only I am left, he says. What was the spirit of Saul the Pharisee? He wanted the Christians destroyed and removed and stamped out, for he saw them as the seed of the serpent. He's in the very spirit, isn't he, of Elijah? But there's a transformation we've seen with Saul here. And just like a relay race, brothers and sisters, this is all it is. They're running a race, aren't they? And Paul actually says those words. We run the race. And the whole point is to pass the baton on. Running with all their might. Moses ran with it. And years later, Elijah was to pick up that. And he was to run with it. And then years later, John the Baptist was to pick up the baton and he was to run with it. And now it's going to fall upon the mantle of Paul to continue the race. And he's going to pass the baton on to who? Timothy. Finish the course, my brother. Run the race. For there is laid upon me a crown of righteousness. So, well, let's begin. Let's go to the beginning of the journey in Acts chapter 9. And you'll see there in Acts 9 and verse 1. And Saul yet breathing out threatenings and slaughter against the disciples of the Lord. So there we have it, the spirit of Elijah here. He wanted destruction on God's people. God's people now were the Christians, new Israel, spiritual Israel. And then in verse 10, he comes to Damascus and meets a man called Ananias. And Ananias now has a message to Paul. You know the name of Ananias, you know what it means? Yahweh graciously gives. And Ananias now has got a gracious message for Paul. He's a messenger, brothers and sisters. Ananias. What's another word for a messenger? Angel. An angel. He's going to be an angel to Paul right now with a gracious message. And the message is, go to Horeb. You're going to be shown the things you must suffer. And Paul gets up and goes to Horeb. Out of interest, who does Elijah meet in the middle of the wilderness? He's going to meet an angel, isn't he? 1 Kings 19, verse 5 tells us that Elijah met a gracious messenger, an angel, and that angel was going to comfort Elijah. And in the very same way, that angel is going to tell Elijah to go to Horeb. We remember, don't we, what happened with Ananias? Right? Look at verse 17. And Ananias went his way and entered into the house and put his hands upon him. Can anyone remember what the angel did to Elijah? What was the first thing? What would you like it to be? He laid his hands on him. The angel touched Elijah. And many, 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 many years later, the messenger of God named Ananias was going to place his hands upon Paul. And after doing this, Paul's eyes were opened, weren't they? And well, what happened next in the story of Paul's conversion? Well, he arose and was baptized. What do you think happened once the angel of God touched Elijah? What was the next thing that happened? Well, the same phrase. He arose up. And then Ananias, once he laid his hands upon Paul, once Paul rose up, it tells us then that Paul ate, drank, and was strengthened. What do you think happened with the angel of God to Elijah in 1 Kings 19? Well, believe it or not, the same thing happens. The angel fed him, the angel watered him, and the same language is that he rose up and he was strengthened. And then Elijah goes onto his quest and he goes to Mount Horeb and he sees three miracles, doesn't he? Three divine miracles given by the Almighty in that fateful day, in that particular cave. He saw the wind, he saw the earthquake, and then he saw the fire. And the description we're given in 1 Kings 19, that the earth quaked and the mountain was rent and the rocks fell, and he almost backed back into the cave, you know, at the majesty and the might of God. And there God showed himself in the wind and the earthquake and the fire. Just out of interest, the opening of Acts, there were three miracles. Can anyone remember what those miracles were? Well, in Acts chapter 2, there was a rushing wind. But in Acts chapter 4, there was a mighty earthquake. And in Acts chapter 2, the apostles' tongues were lit on fire. In the book of Acts, there was a wind, there was an earthquake, and there was a fire. And there God brought his Holy Spirit upon those men in those three miracles. And they were then going to be the power of God on earth, weren't they? Those apostles, that they were given the Holy Spirit. Elijah, many years before, saw the same miracle. But what was given to Elijah? What would you suggest was the greatest miracle of them all? It was a still, small voice. In fact, the Hebrew is that it was the quietness of a gentle whisper. And there in that little voice was earth-shattering power. You know, when the Lord Jesus Christ revealed himself to Paul, what did Paul hear on the road to Damascus, which led him to the road of Sinai? What was the first thing he heard? He heard a voice. And may I suggest, and it's a strong suggestion, that the voice in which it revealed itself was a still, small voice. And you know, the voice of Elijah revealed itself to him as a question, didn't it? What doest thou here, Elijah? And how did the voice reveal itself to Paul? Well, it too revealed itself as a question, didn't it? Saul, Saul, why do you persecute me? And it might just be that Saul heard that as the still small voice right there on the road to Damascus. You know, when we say the name Paul, this is fascinating. We call Paul little, don't we? And we think, you know, we tend to think that's the meaning of his name. But he doesn't. His name doesn't mean little. Do you know what his name means? A gentle little whisper. Paul was to be the still small voice. His name means the quietness of a small whisper. If you look at the real Greek and you get into the nitty-gritty, we just call him little. But actually, his name means a gentle whisper. And brothers and sisters, that gentle whisper began with him. Make no mistake about it. It all began with Paul, because he was going to be the man who was going to be the light to the Gentiles. And it began with Paul as a little whisper many centuries ago. And over the years, that little whisper has been gaining other whispers. And time after time, as history moves forward into the future, the little voice that began with Paul has been gaining a lot of energy. Brothers and sisters who have fallen asleep centuries gone by, brothers and sisters who have fallen asleep in not so distant past, have all taken the voice, that still small voice. And over the centuries into the future, the voice is going to be gathering momentum and momentum and momentum. And it's going to get louder and louder and louder and louder. And when you come to the book of Revelation, it's no longer a gentle whisper, is it? The voice of the saints is like the sound of many waters. All together, the little whispers have now got the sound of trumpets. But it all began with Paul the Apostle at Mount Sinai as he begins the Exodus, brothers and sisters, not of the Hebrews, but he begins the Exodus of the Gentiles. And that's where he was, at Sinai. And we think about Moses. Moses was revealed at Sinai, the character of God, wasn't he? He saw the fullness and the richness and the full spectrum of the character of God. Elijah, on the other hand, didn't see the character of God, but he heard the voice of God, didn't he? And Moses and Elijah at the Mount of Transfiguration saw the character of God and heard the voice of God in the Son of God. And now Paul is going to go to the location of the mountains of Sinai, and he's going to see, isn't he, the character of God and the richness of God in something specific as a sign is given to him in Sinai. There's an important thread between the two, isn't there? Elijah of the Exodus of the future, Moses the Exodus of the past, and Paul the Exodus of the Gentiles. And there they are, the two of them together, and we bring in Paul the third, we've got the Exodus of the Gentiles. So here's a question. Paul is going to see divine revelation. And we know that because, well, Moses saw divine revelation and Elijah heard divine revelation. At Sinai, we believe it was Michael who taught Moses about the Levitical proceedings and the priesthood in the law of Moses. We also believe that it was Michael who uttered the still small voice and brought down the wind, the earthquake, and fire to Elijah the prophet. Michael, his name means he who is like Yah. The archangel, the angel of the host of Israel. Daniel 12 calls Michael the prince of the host. So the question is, if Michael revealed himself to Moses and Elijah on behalf of the Father, who might you think revealed himself to Paul at Sinai? Who is the great prince of God? Who is like unto Yah? Who now is the greater than Michael? Who do you think it's going to be that's waiting for Paul at Sinai? Who is the rightful person to speak to the man Saul, who became Paul. Because we're told in Galatians 1 and verse 12 that Paul says, at Sinai, I neither received it of man, neither was I taught it, but I was given the revelation of Jesus Christ. In fact, that word revelation that Paul uses in Galatians is also used in Revelation 1 verse 1. And what was given in Revelation 1? John on the Isle of Patmos was to be given a personal revelation by Jesus. In fact, the word revelation is exactly what you think it's going to mean, a revealing, an appearance. So I'm going to ask the question again. Who do you think was waiting for Paul at Sinai on that fateful day? Who do you think was going to teach the greatest apostle the greatest exodus? Jesus. You know, as a young boy, Saul sat at the feet of Gamaliel. And as an adult, he was to find himself sitting at the foot of Christ in a cave in Horeb. As Christ now is going to reveal to him how to lead the exodus of the Gentiles. Have you ever wondered how Paul in Acts chapter 9 got all this knowledge? He confounded everybody. Nobody could challenge him. And just 5 verses previously, he was a doubter of the Lord. Where do you think he got his inspiration from? Where do you think he got the knowledge from? And as Moses saw the character and Elijah heard the voice, it came upon Paul and he saw it all and he heard it all. A conversation took place at Horeb about how to save you and I. Just as a conversation took place on the Mount of Transfiguration, how to save you and I. Jesus spoke to Moses and he spoke to Elijah and he spoke to Paul all about the Exodus. And you know, when Moses was at Mount Sinai, he was given the law, wasn't he? And the law was a schoolmaster that could lead us to Christ. And when he came down that mount, his face shone. How do you think Paul's face would have looked when he came down the very same mount, having been taught about grace? Use your imagination, brothers and sisters. Isaiah tells us that he was to become the light of the Gentiles. The man's face, I have no doubt, shone radiantly, being in the presence of Christ in his glory, just as they were at the Mount of Transfiguration. He'd already been given the light, hadn't he, on the road to Damascus. Christ shone his light upon him, didn't he? And he was blinded from it. Now he's going to reveal it. He's going to reveal the light. Acts chapter 13, verse 47, Paul himself says the Lord had told him that he was to be a light to the Gentiles. He came down that mountain, brothers and sisters, I have no doubt, like a blazing fire. What happened when he got back? What happened when he got back at Damascus? So all that, brothers and sisters, all what we've gone through took place between that full stop and the word then in Acts chapter 9. The whole episode is missing. It's not yet picked up in Galatians. And now we can revisit Paul in Acts chapter 9 when he finally gets to Damascus. So Acts 9 and verse 20. And straight away he preached Christ in the synagogues that he is the Son of God. You imagine, right? You know, you imagine seeing Saul, now Paul, the gentle whisper, come to Damascus, and he's filled with it. Look at verse 21. They're amazed at him. They're utterly bewildered. Is this the same Saul we saw in Jerusalem? Something has changed with him. He's gone through a transformation. Almost like he's being transfigured, isn't it? He's a different man altogether, and they're utterly amazed. Look at verse 22. Saul increased the more in strength and confounded the Jews which dwelt at Damascus, proving that this is very Christ. Where's he got all this understanding? Where's he got all this passion and zeal? Where has he got the truth? He'd got it from his Lord, 600 miles away at Sinai. And now he's got the understanding on how to lead the Exodus. And just as Moses came to the Pharaohs of this world, let my people go. Paul is going to the Jews and the Romans now. Let my people go. He's going to meet resistance, isn't he? He's going to meet tremendous resistance. You know, in Exodus chapter 3, when Moses was seeing the burning bush, Moses requested of God and said, how do I do it? How do I persuade Pharaoh to unleash his torture upon your people? How do I do it? You know what God says? A voice. I give you a voice. Elijah, many years later, was to find himself on the very same mount. How do I do it? How do I show mercy upon your people if you're not in the wind and the earthquake and the fire? How do I do it? God gives to him a voice. What do you think Jesus gave to Paul if his name means the gentle whisper? He gave him a voice, brothers and sisters. And we see the product of that voice in Acts chapter 9, where he confounded a lot of them. That they were amazed at his spirit. They were amazed that he was proving that this was the Christ, the seed of the woman, the star of David, the root of Jesse. And actually notice there that Saul increased more in strength. You know, many years later, the Apostle Paul was to find himself in something known as the Tullianum prison in Rome. And he had a death sentence. And just like Elijah had a death sentence from Jezebel, Paul eventually, he too was to have a death sentence. And he writes to his son in the faith in the Tullianum prison, which was a torture hole. And he was soon to face the beheading at the expense of Nero. And he's inspired then to write his final letter to his son in the faith, Timothy, in which Timothy then was to be passed the baton on to. And he says to Timothy, he says, don't worry, my brother. Don't worry, my son. He says, because the Lord stood with me and gave me strength. And look at the phrase you see there in verse 22. Saul increased more in strength. Jesus stood with this man and strengthened him. And he too was able to pass the baton on and give courage and strength to the one who was to come. And you know, when Elijah received the lesson of the still small voice, can anyone remember where he was told to go to? When Elijah heard the still small voice, he was told to go to a specific location. Let me ask a better question. Where would you like it to be? He was told to go to Damascus. And where did Paul the Apostle go straight after he received the still small voice at Sinai? He was told to go to Damascus, where he confounded a lot of them. And just out of interest, what did Elijah end up doing once he'd gone to Damascus? He was there to anoint various people along the way. And when Paul was sent to Damascus, what was he told to do? Well, he was told to baptize various people along the way. And what happened to Elijah whilst he was at Damascus? Because it didn't go well for Elijah. He too had to suffer like Christ, didn't he? And when Elijah was sent to Damascus, it tells us that, well, Jezebel was after him. The king of Israel was after him. And notice this, King Ahab was a Hebrew, wasn't he? He was a Jew and he married a Gentile. And so when Elijah goes to Damascus, he knows full well that the Jews and the Gentiles are after him at Damascus. What was Paul to find in the very same place after leaving the very same place Elijah came from? He too, in Acts 9 and verse 23, found that there was a conspiracy amongst the Jews to kill him. There's our Hebrews. And we're also told in verse 29 that the Grecians also in Damascus sought to slay him as well. And there's the Gentiles. He's public enemy number one, isn't he, Paul? In fact, it's at Damascus in 2 Corinthians 11, we're told that the king of Damascus was after him and wanted to capture him. So we've got a king also who's after Paul, just like King Ahab was after Elijah, the king of Israel and his wife. You know, brothers and sisters, over these two sessions, we have been following, haven't we, that place Horeb. And we've been following, you know, three incredible men as they run this race together. But there's one other man, isn't there, who truly did lead the greatest exodus, not just for the Hebrews and not just for the Gentiles, but for both. How did Jesus begin his mission as he began his exodus? He was going to meet somebody called the messenger, says Malachi. And the word messenger in Malachi is the Hebrew word malak, which means an angel. Who was the angel that greeted Jesus in his life? It was his forerunner, John. And how did John greet Jesus of Nazareth, his cousin? Well, it tells us that he laid his hands upon him. Just like the angel laid his hands upon Elijah, and just like Ananias laid his hands upon Paul. And then after John laid his hands upon Jesus, John, the messenger of Malachi, it says then that Jesus rose up. Just as Paul rose up and just as Elijah rose up. And then Jesus of Nazareth, after receiving strength, Mark tells us he immediately went somewhere, just as Paul immediately went somewhere, and just as Elijah immediately went somewhere. Where might the place be? And don't jump two spaces ahead. He went to the wilderness, didn't he? Just like Elijah went to the wilderness, just as Moses went to the wilderness, and just like Paul went to the wilderness, so too, the greatest of them all, Jesus went to the wilderness. It's actually in the Gospel of Luke that Luke colors in just a little bit of texture. Because once he went to the wilderness, he was then tempted, wasn't he? But Luke tells us he was tempted at a specific location in a specific area in the wilderness. In fact, Luke tells us that Jesus went to a high mountain. So what high mountain do you think Jesus of Nazareth went to after rising up, after being his hands laid upon, and after seeing the angel of John? Where in the wilderness do you think the mountain was that Jesus went to? What specific location? What doest thou here, Jesus of Nazareth? What is it about this particular location that brings you here? I think he went to the very mount where all the exoduses began, Horeb. That's where Moses went. That's where Elijah went. That's where Paul went. And actually, that's the very place in which Elijah is going to be sent from. I think Jesus went to Horeb. And I think Jesus was tempted in a little cave, in a holy place, where a little flame burned once and a mountain was on fire. The very place where God revealed his name, I will be whom I will be. And there, centuries later, he stood. Jesus. In a little cave in the middle of the wilderness. How long was Elijah there for? Or how long was Elijah walking there for? 40 days and 40 nights. And how long was Moses there for? Well, 40 days and 40 nights. And just out of interest, how long was Jesus in the wilderness for? 40 days and 40 nights. I think the Bible is really compelling us to add one and one together and make two. In this case, the two is the Horeb, isn't it? And then when Jesus was tempted, it says angels came down to minister unto him. Now, it was Michael who ministered to Moses, and it was Michael who ministered to Elijah, and it was Jesus who ministered to Paul. The question is, who might have been the angel to minister to Christ? Gabriel. the angel of the Lord. And I believe it was the angel Gabriel who gave Jesus the voice, because right after this moment, he was going to go into Galilee and become a fisher of men and catch up his disciples. He was to become the voice now, brothers and sisters. It was John's, and now it's Jesus's. He's going to be the voice of his Lord. And so in our studies, Moses led a past Exodus. Paul leads the Exodus of the Gentiles, and Elijah is going to lead the future Exodus of the Hebrews. And Jesus is leading the current Exodus out of sin. There's going to be a time where we're going to be called to lead an Exodus as well. The saints. Which mountain do you think we'll be called from? And I'll leave that for you to answer yourselves. Thank you.